mute for it, but as I remember, it was not a chosen instrument, one of those that were highly recommended. So I was a little surprised, in fact, when the high-resolution spectrograph was chosen as one of the flight instruments for this space telescope.
Surprised because you felt that the science or engineering of that instrument was not as good as some of the others?
Well, I had no judgment, not having reviewed them, of the relative merits of the various proposals that were received by NASA. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that the reviewers selected the best proposals, but I was coming from where, when we had studied the problem in terms of the science to be done and the instruments that could be designed to do that science in Phase B, mm-hmm. it was the consensus opinion of the working group that this was not one of the preferred instruments. It was a desirable instrument, but not one of the most desirable, as I remember it.
But now the infrared instrument was considered to be one of the most desirable,
right.
And yet you weren't surprised when that wasn't chosen.
Yes, but that was because I knew that of the difficulties in getting together a team of the best infrared astronomers to propose at this time.
Is the high-resolution spectrograph a much easier technology to develop than an infrared?
A priori, you would say it is easier.
Yeah.
But the infrared detector that was proposed by Neugebauer and his group in Phase B was a state-of-the-art detector. It worked on the ground, so it could have been made to work in space.
Well, I'm curious how Neugebauer's proposal of Phase B might be compared, just in a thumbnail, compared to the IRAS satellite that was launched 2 years ago.
Well, it was entirely different. It was designed for a pointed instrument, which is the space telescope, whereas the IRAS is a survey instrument. It doesn't go sit and point at anything for any long time.
I see. Is that the only difference?
Well,
that's
much
big enough.
Well, that's big enough.
The high-resolution spectrograph technology, that was that the forte of Goddard? I mean, they developed such a thing for IUE, I believe.
I don't know.
Do you know if Sobieski had anything to do with the original Goddard proposal?
I don't know.
He said that Bagas supported it. Was he reflecting Jack Brandt's interests?
No, I think Al Bagas was on the Phase B of Space Telescope and was the proponent for high-resolution spectroscopy in that group. I believe he did not propose for Space Telescope as a PI because of his IUE involvement. But I would be surprised if he wasn't a key person or the key person in the development of the instrumental ideas. I don't know. He certainly had the history more than anybody else.
Let's move on to the high-speed photometer. How did that come into being?
Well, it got in the back door. There was no high-speed photometer. There was no photometry represented on the Phase B working group. Nobody from photometry proposed. Bob O'Dell was on the working group in charge of data operations, which was presumably his role in Copernicus, in the OAO satellite, in the OAO, Wisconsin OAO proposal.
Bob Less.
What did I say?
Bob O'Dell.
Oh, sorry, Bob Less. And Art Code was an old photometry buff, was also there. But I felt very strongly that there should be a simple instrument and that there was a lot of good science to do with photometry. So although I wasn't an instrumentalist, and in fact I never used a photometer myself, I formed a ad hoc team, which I led until I went to Israel. And then this guy from Texas took over.
Jeffords.
No,
Do you want to shut the window?
Right. Well, I also want to get some water.
I speak for Tom Ver's story. That's really all I wanted. Just a couple more questions after that.
Yeah, well, it came in the back door. There was no high-speed photometer selected. At my initiation, Bob appointed me the head of the ad hoc photometer team. Ed Nather and some other people who knew much more about photometry than I did served on that. They essentially wrote a version of the Phase B proposal for a photometer, which I played some role in the scientific ideas, but not in the machine ideas. And although I probably was I think legally I had to sign off on it, my agreement with Nather was that he would take the full responsibility for the design of the instrument.
Why was the idea of a high-speed photometer introduced at all?
I felt that it was simple, and that was useful, and it was simple and had good science, and it was important to have an instrument aboard which was simple, so it would surely work, and that the science that it could do was very important, not necessarily the most glamorous, but very important science.
Were you worried?
I was also involved at the time in X-ray binaries and other problems where a lot of the work was photometry, so it was natural for me to have thought photometry at that time.
Uh-huh. Were you worried? You said simple. Were you worried that perhaps all the other instruments wouldn't work or would only work to a degree and you needed to have one that you could count on?
Well, without being negative, it would certainly seem to me to be an advantage that there was one instrument which seemed so simple that it couldn't fail, and you know, whose principles even a theorist could understand and whose components a theorist would be basically familiar with.
How did Bless enter the picture?
Bless was the PI on the photometry proposal. But I don't remember that Bless played a role or a major role in the photometry discussions
in the early days.
In the Phase B.
But I guess what I'm asking is, Bless headed data and operations in Phase B.
Right.
And then somehow he ended up PI of high-speed photometer.
Well, he did because he was the PI on the Wisconsin proposal for a high-speed photometer.
And why did he propose for a high-speed photometer?
I guess he had a lot of photometry experience, having been on the Copernicus, played an important role in the previous Copernicus, previous AOAO, OAO from Wisconsin.
Yeah, I should ask him that. Were there other proposals for a high-speed photometer? Did Nather propose?
I urged Nather to propose. I urged Nather also to propose for the data and operations team leader position. He, I believe, did not have an independent proposal on either. I mean, he certainly didn't in the data and operations team later. Whether he did anything whether he's a member of a team, I don't even know whether he has any, whether he was a member of any photometry team. I don't remember.
Do you, one last thing, I don't know that we have on the record, on tape, the story of how it was found necessary to go to 14 and a quarter magnitude stars for the guide star selection system. Could you just quickly say how
You should have that. Is yes. An interesting story. The project had for some years, I think 13 and a half magnitude. I forget, or 13th magnitude, I forget which it was, as its limit. And also had the statement that we had to cover 85% of the sky. And, I'm sorry, that the chance of success had to be bigger greater than or equal to 85% in any region of the sky.
Yes.
And those were those calculations were calculations carried out by the project and also by Ed Groth, based upon...
Excuse me, by the project you mean Odell?
Somebody at Marshall under Odell's direction. And also by Ed Groth independently, all based on Allen's astrophysical quantities, numbers that appeared there. And Ed Groth described those at one working group meeting that we went to. And at the same time, Ray Sonura and I had been working on galaxy models as an outgrowth of another project, models of our galaxy and the star distribution. And it seemed to me, I made some calculations on the plane coming back, which showed me that our estimates for 85% probability required a much fainter limiting magnitude than what was being discussed by the contractors and by NASA, as what was had been accepted.
You could know this with the back-of-the-envelope calculation?
Yeah, I don't know if it was back-of-the-envelope, but it was something I could do on the plane, and I did it on the plane. And then I came back here, and Ray and I discussed it, and Ray wrote this computer program which simulated the fine guidance system, but also we calculated, the main thing was we went back and we got new data and from Don Weistroff, and we got, we reanalyzed the Allen source data. Mm-hmm. Just the day we went back to see what data that Allen had analyzed in order to get the numbers that appeared in his standard book of astrophysical quantities. And in fact, substantiated that very clearly, that it was there was a big discrepancy of a magnitude and a half, a factor of four, really fainter light power that the device had to have in order to do what we had promised to do and what NASA had accepted to do. And I communicated that, you know, in writing and by telephone calls around as it was being developed. And I remember that Bob Odell was very skeptical at the beginning, first of all, because he was embarrassed, I'm sure, and because the project had been out, signed contracts on 13th magnitude. But also, you know, there was the standard work which everybody had accepted, and the Allen, and we had to, so that was one of the reasons why in one of our reports we had to circulate an analysis of how Allen had incorrectly made several incorrect analyses of the old data, although the new data was much better and I thought much more convincing anyway.
Did you let Allen know this?
Yes, and I exchanged letters with Allen, they're in my file, where Allen admitted his, we sent him early on before we had published anything, analysis of what he had done and what the new data showed, and he thanked me warmly for it and said that would appear in his new astrophysical quantities. I haven't checked, but I'm sure it does. And all subsequent measurements have, of course, borne that out. We had very good arguments by the time we were finished. But I did feel that our reports, it was too, the project was very ambivalent about our work. For one thing, it was an enormous investment of the project in the fine guidance system as defined by the 13th magnitude. There was also an enormous amount of embarrassment because this was a very simple technical error that had been just clearly made by the project. So in one sense, the project and Marshall were not happy to have this made public. On the other hand, it was a had a lot of implications for the telescope. You couldn't go up there and only reach the target you wanted less than half the time. That would also be a terrible embarrassment. So I had to push to get our papers circulated and published. And in fact, the project would not publish the second one, which had to do with color errors. Mm-hmm. They are now used by the people who do derivation of the guide star selection system, mm-hmm. The definition of the guide star selection system as part of their as part of their task. But people, they tell me that every 6 months or so they have to Xerox them because they were never published by NASA and send them out to the contractors or to new people involved in the project because they're just not known.
What are color errors?
Well, we investigate. We gave a number of. We investigated a number of formulae, a number of effects in our second report, which had to do with smaller effects than the ones we originally investigated. And one of them had to do with the color mismatch between the plates on which you took the survey of the sky and the response of the telescope fine guidance system. So a star which had a certain characteristic brightness as seen on the survey plates with one spectral response would have might be relatively brighter or fainter compared to its companions as seen by the fine guidance system of the space telescope. So some stars which were at the limit of close to the limit of what you might think was acceptable on the basis of the survey plates might not be discoverable by the fine guidance system and lead to problems.
Yeah.
Whereas new objects might appear that you would not have programmed the telescope to look for because of their difference in color match. And so those were small problems and small effects, but we investigated a number of effects like that. One that keeps coming up, which we never published, was the effect of binaries on the confusion of the telescope, which is a small effect.
Yeah.
It's never been... a lot of people worry about it, but Ray and I did work out the effect in great detail and showed that it's not important. But the only evidence that that's true is some statements that I... some view graphs that I showed at some working group meeting and the statements I make every year or two to that effect at working group meetings, but it's never been published.
Is there no outlet for that kind of publication other than within NASA? From within NASA?
Oh, I suppose if Ray and I had been energetic about doing it, we would have. Or we could have published it someplace if we wanted to. It certainly would be possible to do so now as a technical publication of the Space Telescope Science Institute.
Right.
But I don't see any need for it because, first of all, it's going to be proven when the telescope goes up, and second, if anybody's in doubt about it, they can always call me and ask me.
Yeah.
There aren't very many people that worry about it.
That's essentially it. Is that the story?
Story.
What was the once you discovered this, and indeed it was published, or the major result of it was published, did NASA follow up by changing the specifications?
No. Because it was too expensive.
Yeah.
And that led to continuous interest on the part of myself and many people to the performance of the fine guidance system and the fear that the fine guidance system would not do the trick. And that was at the cost of a lot of money in reprogramming, eventually remedied so far as we can tell now. That's what we're promised. But the stakes were too high for NASA ever, I think you explained that to me, to ever have reneged on its formal 13th magnitude commitment. Although right now NASA remains curiously ambivalent on that. There is this highest level of requirement for the space telescope, which is a level of requirement that the project must meet. And if it doesn't meet, it has to go to headquarters and to Congress to explain why it doesn't meet those specifications.
A level one requirement.
I think so. And I think the only place that a scientific document is cited in any of those level one requirements is this first report that Ray and I made. And there, the performance of the fine guidance system so far as its faintness level that it must reach and confusion level is defined in terms of that NASA document, which NASA circulated. It says 85% as described in this document. And that's to distinguish it from 85% as might be calculated from the then existing scientific literature, the pre-existing scientific literature.
It's not much of a case, though.
Pardon?
It's not much of a case if you're going to take it to court.
I suppose. but had it, you know, if it fails, and, you know, I think the scientific, that's one of the few issues on which the scientific community is unanimous.
Yes.
There's no point in setting up a $1 billion instrument if you can't look at half the targets that you want to.
I'd like to ask you a sort of summary question. In this discussion of instruments, it's quite apparent that you had a major role in defining instruments, as one would expect from your position as interdisciplinary scientist. And
I was one of many people who had a major role.
Yes. Do you feel that that you made a substantial contribution to defining this, to defining the instruments?
I doubt that, with a couple of exceptions. I think I think the one thing which I did, which was probably unique, was to suggest and push for the mode in which you had several observations, one or more additional observations to the main observation at a given time, the so-called serendipity mode.
Yes.
And that was my idea based on what people did for particle beams. And I didn't see why it couldn't work just as well for photon beams. And that, I think, probably would not have happened in the environment in which the telescope was developed with the people that were there if I hadn't been there, because there was resistance to that. It wasn't being done that way at that time in optical telescopes.
Uh-huh.
And none of the people that were involved were particularly enthusiastic or interested in, or even thought that was a good idea initially. So that, and with that one exception, which may be a minor exception, probably is a minor exception, I don't think I had a major role. I made some contribution to some of the other instruments. I think it would be hard to argue the case whether or not there would have been a photometry instrument or not have photometry instrument if we hadn't discussed it in phase B. I wouldn't have been surprised if Bless or Wisconsin had in the end proposed one, even if we hadn't had one discussed in phase B, but who knows? It's not a case that you can argue about. So I would say with the exception of the serendipity mode, I'm not sure that I had a particularly important role.
That's the end of the tape.